I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, Republican strategist Ron Christie, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas. Welcome to the shop. How we living?
Hey.
Doing good, man.
Well.
Hey.
RC, first time in.
What's up, bro? Not too much, man. How are you?
Good, man. Welcome. All right, well, let's jump right in, all right? Longtime talk show host Dr. Laura Schlesinger has apologized for her use of the N-word when an African-American called into her show on Tuesday, Michelle.
Yeah, she apologized on her blog, and I have to give a language note here. Just be forewarned. This is not something that everybody is going to appreciate hearing, but we, you know, you have to know what it is that was actually said. Now, so what happened is on Tuesday, a caller who identified herself as Jade, says she is African-American. She's married to a white man, and she wanted some advice from Dr. Laura about what to do about her husband's friend. She says her husband's friends make black jokes in her presence, and Dr. Laura responded that she was hypersensitive. And here's some of the exchange, and the first voice you hear is the caller. We're playing this uncensored. The N-word will be heard. So here it is.
I can't believe someone like you is on the radio spewing out the nigger word, and I hope everybody
I didn't
heard it.
Spew out the nigger word.
Nigger.
And right. I said that's what you hear.
Heard it.
Yes, they did.
I hope everybody heard it. So what
they did, and I'll say it again. Nigger is what you hear on HB. Why don't you let me finish a sentence?
Okay.
Don't take things out of context. Don't NAACP me. Leave them in context.
Means, and I know it came from a white person. And I know the white person made
all right.
it bad.
Thank you very much. Can't have this argument. If you're that hypersensitive about color and don't have a sense of humor, don't marry out of your race.
Wow.
Wow.
Thanks for that, Michelle.
I'm not sure I thank me for that, but...
I mean, well, we needed to hear it, right? But Ruben...
No, you have to, yeah.
Ruben, for me, I think the most offensive thing she said was, you know, if you're that sensitive about race... Don't marry outside your race. You know, why don't you weigh in on this? We've heard racist comments before. You know, we got KK Kramer, Michael Richards on one side, we got Don Imus on the other. Is this even newsworthy?
Right. Yeah, to that end, if that was all it was, it wouldn't be that newsworthy, frankly, because what you have is one person, you know, shame on this person. She said something inappropriate. She deserves to be condemned for it, but it's limited to the one person. It's not like coming on and doing a whole show about whether a university, an institution, a political party is racist. That's a lot broader. And you're right. Michael Richards, I mean, Mel Gibson. Why at some point do we stop talking about these things, right? It's about one messed up individual, and we tend to leave it at that. But the reason this is a story, and the reason I think this is significant, the most offensive thing that Dr. Laura said was this whole business about hypersensitivity. Mm. First rule of thumb, if you're not black, don't go telling black people what is or isn't racist about black people. And that was the whole conversation with this woman caller. Only this woman caller, as a black woman, is in a position to say what she considered racist when her friends, her husband's friends come over to the house. And it was supremely arrogant, irresponsible, and inappropriate for a non-black person to lecture a black person about what is or isn't racist. It was like, it would be as if, you know, four straight guys on a barbershop started talking about what is or is not anti-gay or homophobic. I mean, at some point, you just have to sit back and be a little humble and realize that there's some experience out there you can't relate to, so shut up.
RC?
Well, I got to tell you, this is almost what you get when you call Dr. Laura Schlesinger looking for advice. I mean, why would you call her
it's true.
Looking for advice in something like this? But I agree with most of what Ruben had to say. But for me, the most offensive thing that Schlesinger had to say was, well, if you're that upset, don't marry outside of your race. I mean, I think that we have made enormous strides in this country trying to look genuinely at the content of people's character rather than the color of their skin. And it shows perhaps that Schlesinger just can't get over looking at people as individuals, and she looks at them as being black or white. Why can't we look at people as being people?
How about if a white woman had called up and said, my white husband and his white friends make racial jokes, and I think that's morally wrong. What would she say then? Don't get married at all?
I mean, I think she probably would.
I mean, think about that. I mean, black people aren't the only people who are offended by racism. Right. Let me just point this out. And I'm just floored, but it's, someone calls you up and says, I take your point, Christy, at all. Because, you know what, it would never in a million years occur to me to call her asking for advice. But she has this platform, and that's what gets her. She's in the public sphere, and people evidently think she has something credible to say. So tell me what you're saying when a woman calls to you and says that her sense of dignity, propriety, and morality is being violated in her own home. And what you're saying is, not a big deal.
Well, you know, so.
Yeah, and the idea that you need a sense of humor to marry outside your race is kind of, it's like wild.
Well, you need a sense of humor to be married, period. Let me just let me share that with those who don't.
I'll drink to that. I'll definitely drink to that. A-Train.
Well, you know, Dr. Laura was, you know, telling the caller that, you know, she was hypersensitive. Well, I'm going to tell her that she was hyper-redunculus in what she did.
Nice.
I mean, this is, you know, what I find the most interesting is the fact that, you know, she was talking about how, you know, hip-hop stars and rappers drop the N-word all the time. Well, Dr. Laura, you're not Jay-Z or Kanye West, so I have no idea. I mean, I'm still baffled by what happened.
But there is that point,
though. Is that a decent defense? Is that a decent defense? I hear that a lot.
Well, no, not from her, but
right,
it's a good point. It's a very valid point. I mean, one of the shows I like to watch a lot, and it's a great show, very well written, is The Wire.
Yeah.
It was on HBO for a while. And you dropped the N-word in that. I mean, you have that whole show, you know, you have a lot of black folks throwing the N-word back and forth at each other all the time. And it's something that I think white folks, non African Americans, find confusing, because among yourselves you can throw this word around, but the first lesson you have to learn is, if you're not black, you don't get to use that word. I get to call it the N-word. Okay, I don't get to use it in long form. And for her to do what she did on the radio show shows that she missed that. Again, the most offensive part, I think, this part about, don't NAACP me. You know, the whole notion of that is sort of like, there's a lot of white folks out there. Let's just get real. There's a lot of white folks out there who have spent, particularly if they're like 50, 60 years old, who spent their whole lifetime being told by black folks and by the NAACP that they're racist about this and racist about that. And I think many African-American leaders and leadership groups have overplayed that card. We've talked about this on this show. Now, there are times where it's appropriate to call somebody a racist, but when you overdo it, that's what got into her mind. That's why she gave me that comment about the NAACP. If you ask Dr. Laura, she would say that the NAACP makes a whole cottage industry out of accusing people of racism. That's how she sees it.
Here's my thing, though. But when you say make a cottage industry out of it, I mean, part of, to me, that's what having power in society is about, which is having the power to stake a claim. And the argument that what I find difficult is the idea that who gets to decide that? Or is it only gets white people are the only people who get to decide what's racist?
And it's a case by case.
But that's what discussion is about. And she said, the conversation goes on much further than, she says hypersensitivity, okay, which is being bred by a black activist. I really thought once we had a black president, the attempt to demonize whites hating blacks would stop, but it seems to have grown. I don't get it. Yes, I do. It's all about power. I do get it. You know what? It is about power. It's about people other than her being allowed to say what is on their minds. And frankly, that seems to be what this is about, is that she's the only person who gets to set the parameters. No, we don't get to talk about this. I mean, that's what I find disturbing. But you know what? Why are we talking about her? Why are we giving our show over to her? Excuse me. I'm sorry. I just, like, why are we giving her? That's just, I don't know. Sorry.
All right.
That's
well,
just where I'm at
let's keep
that.
It in motion. Because today may be Friday the 13th, but New York Congressman Charles Rangel, well, he says he's not shook by ethics charges or those who says he needs to leave office with his dignity intact. Now, yesterday in Harlem, he vowed not to answer any more ethics questions and only focus on his campaign, Michelle.
Do you want to hear what he said? A little bit about
Absolutely.
What he said? Do you want to hear? Okay, here's a short clip. Here it is.
Bust it.
Hey, I'm 80 years old. All my life has been, from the beginning, public service. And all I'm saying is that if it is the judgment of people here for whatever reason that I resign, then heck, have the ethics committee expedite this. Don't leave me swinging in the wind until November. If this is an emergency, and I think it is, to help our local and state governments out, what about me? I don't want anyone to feel embarrassed, awkward. Hey, if I was you, I may want me to go away too. I am not going away. I am here.
Just to clarify, that was from Tuesday on the floor. He was on the House floor 31 minutes, as our son said. You know, also, Maxine Waters was also heard from today. If would you like to hear a short clip from that? She's also a lawmaker from California. She's also facing ethics charges related to her alleged advocacy for a bank with which her husband was involved. And this is what she had to say today.
I have not violated any house rules. I fully disclosed all of my financial information as requested by house rules, and in fact, went above and beyond what was required by repeatedly disclosing my and my husband's financial interests during Financial Services Committee hearings. Neither my staff nor I engaged in any improper behavior, and we did not influence anyone, and we did not gain any benefit.
There you go.
Wow. Thanks, okay, Michelle. Jimmy. All right. Well, you know me. I mean, those cats went to the Marion Barry / John Shaft School of political science. You know, and to some degree,
that's what we say. The blank set me up, right?
Yeah. To some degree, I admire it, but there's something to be said for just quiet resilience. Ruben,
let me just clarify that. I feel like I have to speak on that. First of all, there is a process to go through. These persons are innocent until proven guilty. There was no videotape showing them smoking crack or anything like that. I'm not sure the analogy holds. I take your point, Jimmy, but, you know, there's a process to go through here.
No, I totally agree. I'm just saying, you know, there's something to be said for standing up and saying, you know, let me do this.
Okay.
You know, but also, you know, quiet resilience, you know, as opposed to vociferous resilience.
Oh, you can explain it. Let me just jump in to say, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Ruben Navarrete, and Ron Christie. Back to you, Jimmy. I think you'd ask Ruben to weigh in on this.
Yeah. What do you make of that defiance?
Well, listen, it's unfortunate. If you take a look at the number of folks out there who have been looked at for ethical violations just in the last couple of years, There are black and white folks on that list. There aren't just African Americans on that list, and there aren't just white folks on that list. There's a mixture of folks on that list. So it's a fair point to say this is a scrutiny that applies to a lot of different folks. A lot of different folks have been looked at in this way, innocent until proven guilty, but accused of various improprieties. It's a multiracial thing. But it is sad, I think, when you have African American leaders who've been there for a long time who find themselves under this kind of scrutiny. Because assuming that this is not just a politically motivated witch hunt where you have, let's see now, the Democrats control the White House, they control the Justice Department, the Democrats control both houses of Congress, they sit on the majority of these committees that are going to be looking at these individuals. It's a little hard to make the argument that this is politically motivated if, in fact, you know, it's these same Democrats who are coming at other Democrats. I mean, how's that work? I just think there are a lot of questions to be asked here, but it's unfortunate, it's lamentable that you have African-American leaders who've been there for so long who now find themselves, you know, in this very unfortunate position.
R.C.?
These people have put themselves in the situation that they're in. You know, I had the honor and privilege to work on Capitol Hill for almost 9 years, and I can tell you, maintaining the public trust is one of the most important things that you can do, whether you're a member of Congress or whether you're a staffer who's in the privilege to serve them and to serve the American people. And Charlie Rangel, a very, very nice guy, very affable individual. But if you're the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, the committee that is charged with writing our tax laws, if you are allegedly not even disclosing your income or hiding or shielding your income from the scrutiny of others while we're in a very difficult economic time and people are putting their pennies together to pay their taxes, you shouldn't be above the law. And I think that there's a certain entitlement that members of Congress have that they think that they are better than the law, better than the rest of us, and that they don't have to abide by the same rules. And I think, unfortunately, this could be a case where two senior African-American members, while they're innocent until proven guilty, might find themselves in front of a trial with their peers and the American people for forgetting who they serve, which is us, the American people.
Well, we're gonna keep it in motion because you know I mean Rangel, you know let's let it play out and then let's see what happens. So let's keep it in motion, Michelle. Let's talk a little bit about Steve Slater, the JetBlue flight attendant. You know he's riding this wave of attention and support all over the blogosphere. Now on Monday, Slater was allegedly pushed to his limits. He got on the plane intercom system, cussed out a few people, and then exited the plane by sliding down the emergency chute, but not before grabbing a couple brewskis.
What is up
with
that?
Yeah, Arsalan, that's a bug out.
You know, Arsalan, you got to help me out here because, you know, everybody here flies a lot. I think you guys probably fly more than I do at the moment, but I'm grounded. But what, okay. Arson, what is up with that? The guy's become like a folk hero. What is up with that?
I mean, this is.
And if he was any other color, he'd be in the joint with a 7-figure bail.
He was arrested. He is facing criminal charges, including criminal mischief, reckless endangerment, and trespassing.
He would have never got out of jail if he was any other color. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, that's one point of view.
Hey, Jimmy, don't NAACP me.
Oh, no.
Okay, Ruben, I won't end up letting you
go there. Sorry, Dr.
Go
Laura.
A-train.
Dr.
Go
Laura,
ahead,
nothing
A-train.
But love for you, girl. Nothing, sorry.
Get it, A-Train. Go ahead.
Well, for me, you know, this story is kind of like the Balloon Boy story. These sort of just like way out of left field conjured up media stories. I mean, apparently the guy just went a little squirrely, did his thing on the intercom, and he's like, peace, I'm out.
You know what I have to say that bothers me about this? I think that this guy engaged in an abuse of power. Now, I don't know whether he needs to have been handcuffed and paraded before the cameras.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, that's a whole other thing.
No, absolutely.
But the fact is, you are, as a flight attendant, in a position of power, okay? Mm-hmm. And I think it's an abuse of power to jump on the public address system and curse people out because one person was rude to you. And I think that part of it, I find that I don't understand why people don't get how vulnerable you are when you're a passenger on a plane. Mm. And these people, you know, they have the uniforms. They're the ones. They can kick you off a plane for nothing.
Right.
Okay? I don't know.
Well, no, I agree. And I think that's why it should have been, you know, an internal company matter. I don't know why it had to make it to, you know, the media global headlines all around the world.
Jimmy, what do you think?
I think, like I said, if he was any other color, he'd be in the joint, 7-figure bail. Let's not forget that somebody on the ground could have been killed. And what this guy did was reckless, and I don't know, in any other context, we'd be checking his credentials to see if he was, you know, a pseudo-terrorist or something. Nah, you know, this guy needs to be thrown up under the jail. Let's make an example of him.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Forget about it.
Jimmy Hardline. That's why they call it the Hardline, I guess.
That's right. Hard but fair, baby.
All right. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book, The Denzel Principle. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist with the Washington Post Writers Group. He also writes for CNN.com. He was with us from San Diego. Ron Christie heads Christie Strategies. He's a former special assistant to President George W. Bush and Deputy Assistant to Vice President Cheney. He joined us from our studios in New York. And Arsalan Iftikhar was with us in Washington. He's the founder of themuslimguy.com. He's a legal fellow for the Institute of Social Policy and Understanding. Thank you all.
Peace.
Take care, all.
Thank you.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.